Gary Hart is a former U.S. senator and presidential candidate and the author of 21 books, including his Oxford doctoral dissertation on Jefferson's ideal of the Republic. His new book is The Republic of Conscience. He asked the question, why do Americans feel so bad about their country right now? The former Colorado senator and presidential contender argues that the answer has to do with the gap between who we believe ourselves to be and who we have become. Again, the name of the book is The Republic of Conscience. It is a great pleasure to welcome Senator Gary Hart back to the roundtable this morning. Senator, thank you very much for being with us. It's always a pleasure.
Oh, thank you. It's my pleasure.
It was a great pleasure having you on about a year ago when this book came out in hardcover. It is now out in paperback. The book, of course, looks at the idea of why Americans feel so bad about their country. It seems that that problem certainly has not improved in the last 12 months.
I don't believe so at all. One can hope that in the political campaign that things will turn more positive and will address some of the issues that I try to bring up in the book, but I don't see it right now. The book was not written directly for the 2016 election, but it certainly has implications for it.
But it does tell us that there is a system that is broken and that we need to correct the system, which, as you say, has implications, because one of the narratives that has come out of this election cycle is that there are many people that are, quote, outsiders who are making ripples within politics because of that reason, because people are fed up.
That's true, but the approaches are much different. Obviously, commentators are comparing Mr. Trump and Senator Sanders, but they're obviously worlds apart. They are tapping into the unhappiness and anxiety and anger, but in much, much different ways. I think, obviously, from Senator Sanders' point of view, much more positively.
You talk about in the book about how the founders of this country created this republic knowing that it was vulnerable to corruption. How so, and how have those vulnerabilities been shown, especially over the past several decades?
Well, practically to a person, they were students of ancient history, and some of them even read ancient Greek and Latin. And so they knew the language of the republic from Athens to early Rome and on beyond that. And they, when in theorizing about the new country they were founding, they used the ancient ideal of the republic as the format and the principles of it. And one of those principles was what they called resistance to corruption. Now, if you ask 10 Americans what they believe corruption to be, they would say bribery or illegal activity. But what the founders defined corruption as was putting special or narrow interests ahead of the common good or the national interest. And if you apply that standard to our government today in the 21st century, it's, as I say in the book, it's massively corrupt.
In that corruption, how quickly can that problem be addressed? And it really takes everyone on board to solve it to some degree, doesn't it?
It's going to require a kind of grassroots uprising by the American people, and I think we're seeing variations of that. We've seen it from the Tea Party to the occupiers and so forth. But what I'm urging is a kind of consciousness that isn't focused on liberal, conservative, or Republican, or Democrat. It is thinking about what's best for the country long term. And, of course, in the preamble to the Constitution, it talks about what we owe our posterity. That is to say, we're not making decisions just for ourselves today. We're making decisions on climate, whole range of things that will affect generations to come. In any case, I think it will come from the grassroots. For example, let me suggest people identify a nonprofit called Issue One, which is about this theme. And in that organization, we have created a group called the Reformers, of former members of Congress of both parties, over 100 of us, that are beginning to push for major changes in the lobbying system and the campaign finance system. We're going to have to overturn Citizens United, and that will inevitably happen because it was a bad decision, but it's going to take a long time. In the meantime, we can make changes in the way we finance our campaigns, use social media, as Senator Sanders is doing, to raise small-dollar contributions and not just major contributors and billionaires in Wall Street.
Have you endorsed a candidate yet?
No, because I never believe much in endorsements. I don't think they mean anything. I think they're absolutely meaningless in today's world. But on the other hand, nobody's asked.
When you were running for president, did you care about endorsements? I mean, is it something that you just felt you had to care about?
Well, you get questions from the press. If you're a serious candidate, why haven't other senators endorsed you? And after I won New Hampshire and began to win primaries, former Senator Dodd of Connecticut endorsed me, former governor and then senator from Nebraska. Kerry endorsed me, and I had quite a lot of state and local people endorse me during that process. But in the long run, it's up to the individual candidate.
And when you look at your campaigns that you have run, and I ask this as a two-part question, and the first part is, did you see an impact that changed? Something fundamental changed in the way we look and the way we choose a president as a result of what you went through? And will we see some fundamental change as a result of what we're going through now?
No, not really. I don't. And I haven't spent a lot of time thinking about it. I do think my experience, without going into all the details, really was a struggle between, if you will, between me and and certain elements of the media. I think those elements have kind of backed off the personal intrusiveness, and that's to the good. But I don't think there's been any positive structural changes as a result of my candidacy. I do think that an awful lot of young people were brought into public service as a result of those campaigns in the 80s. And have made a tremendous contribution, not necessarily in public office, but in the public sector. And that's been very gratifying.
So it must please you again to go back to Senator Sanders' campaign of the fact that he is bringing in younger people for you to see that.
I think it's a big plus. He is appealing to younger people, even though he's not young himself. And that's healthy. That's very healthy. Any national campaign that brings new generation of citizens and voters in and they participate and they see firsthand how you run for office, how the system works, is a hugely positive educational experience. So good for him. I think any candidate who does that, it's what I tried to do in the 80s, is providing a service even though they don't win.
In the elements of the campaign that we have seen so far, and in reading your book, which is entitled The Republic of Conscience, it is safe to say, I think, in several debates and several swaths of the conversation, we are far from conscious. Do you see that?
Yeah, the title phrase comes from a very wonderful poem by the Nobel Prize-winning Irish poet, Seamus Heaney, the late Seamus Heaney. And it's a lovely poem. And it seemed to me to summarize what I was trying to say in that book, that the salvation, if you will, of the American government, the American society in the future is based upon ideals and principles that we need to preserve and protect and defend. And it's not based on whether liberals or conservatives end up. The best presidents don't fit on you know, was Abraham Lincoln a liberal or a conservative? Who knows? Who cares?
Right.
Some of the worst presidents in our history, including in recent times, have been ideological. Well, that's not the way you govern this country. So I think I have great confidence in the good judgment, the wisdom of the American people over the long term. We do lurch kind of from one strange trend to another, but in the long term, we correct ourselves and we move forward. I don't know whether that's centrism or moderation or what it is. It's basically just being intelligent and thoughtful and not extremely ideological one way or the other.
So, because, and again, not to drive this point too much at home, but I think the average person who is watching what is unfolding now perhaps is finding intelligence and to be maybe at a premium.
I think that's a fair assessment. It is good that the turnout in the Iowa caucuses was high, even though part of that was driven by interest group biases and so forth. We'll wait and see in the next primaries in New Hampshire, clearly very soon, and others to follow, whether turnout is high on both sides or not. But the more people that participate, I think the better off we are.
The name of the book is The Republic of Conscience. It is out in paperback now, published by Blue Rider Press. Senator Gary Hart, a great pleasure as always to have you on our program. I thank you very much for joining.
My pleasure, and I appreciate the time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book is The Republic of Conscience by Gary Hart, with a new afterword. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.